Blog Talk Radio.
I am living on Channel Z.
Hello, it's Trisha,
filling in for Gwendolyn Holden Barry here at Here Be Monsters on Blog Talk Radio. Here Be Monsters is sponsored by Roundtree7.com, which is where a bunch of people are writing stuff to, like, connect with other humans in the world. This is kind of like a message in a bottle, since you have to, when you're talking into air, it's really like you have to have faith somebody's listening. Today I note there are two people in the chat room who may or may not be listening, but it looks like somebody's out there. So hello. And we're here to show our solidarity with Occupy Everywhere, not just Wall Street, although it is called Occupy Wall Street. This movement is just Occupy. Just Occupy. And right now, we're occupying a little space on this internet radio thing. Which is just weird. I'm thinking today about a couple of things. One is, first of all, point of view. And what my point of view is, specifically, and this is, I'm wondering about this stuff on account of yesterday, there was a guy in the chat room named Aaron who was asking if Gwen and I were economists, was his first question. And then he was wondering if either of us had been unemployed or whatever. I think he was trying to establish our perspective. And I've been thinking about it and realized that the primary perspective Gwen and I share, she comes from a tradition of, I would call, ancient mysticism and mythology. I come from an early childhood perspective with a Jungian psychoanalytic bent, I suppose, and also we're of a certain age, and also sometimes after 420 people smoke weed, and that's all I'm going to say. And the name of my own blog is Menopausal Stoners, and Gwen and I could share that title, as could Dusty, who's here on Tuesdays. Dusty is of a certain age and has smoked a little weed in her time. And a menopausal stoner does not have to be smoking weed necessarily. Number one, there is a menopausal stoner category two, so it's not gender specific. And smoking weed, although it's something I think it would help, it's contraindicated in certain circumstances. Some people, it makes paranoid and quiet and whatever. Not everybody likes it. But imagine if suddenly everybody in the Congress would just, like, relax and, like, get over themselves and do something for a fucking change. I have a fantasy about making them all high and, you know, passing the peace pipe or herbal tea or just something. But at least a magic potion, just if there was a way to give them a magic potion and make them real humans instead of the tools of the 1% that they are, because they all suck, and that's my bias too, but it's an informed perspective, I hope, that's to answer Aaron's question about our perspective. In some ways, he was asking how we got our information or educated ourselves. And one thing we do is look around the internet and get high and talk to each other. But the point is, well, I don't know if Aaron's selling a book or has his own blog. I was curious about that. Today, as I was thinking in the morning about what to say here, I was thinking about the word anarchy. And the reason I'm wondering about anarchy is because
really, I don't know anything about anarchy except, you know, the Sex Pistols sang that song, Anarchy in the UK. It's only coming sometime in maybe. And whatever else Johnny Rotten and Sid Vicious were singing, I was jumping up and down in Austin, Texas, when that was happening. The Ramones were in town more than the Sex Pistols, I think. But anyhow, that's another thing about a menopausal stoner perspective would be the music that we listened to in the popular culture at that time. And one of the things we all grew up with was the television, and which I believe is a tool of the corporations and who are selling a consumerist lifestyle, and that acts as propaganda so that we're isolated in our houses, not talking to each other, and think we have to buy a bunch of products in order to be human, when really what we should be doing is not buying anything or more than we need to be, you know, a wise consumer, not a mindless consumer. Think about sustainability and connect with each other. TV does not want us to do that. It encourages people to sit and stare. And while they may share an experience watching a show, like we often do with our friends and family, it's still, it can be a solitary thing, and you may never talk to each other. And but what we saw were things like body bags coming home from Vietnam, what we don't see on TV today, even though Obama, I believe, said that was a good idea. He said a lot of things. I remember personally, hearing him say that he would be putting on a pair of walking shoes to walk with the unions, which he did not do in Wisconsin, and he is not doing now because he's, you know, a tool of the plutocracy. That reminds me, I was thinking about anarchy, because anarchy, if you think of the definition of anarchy from that we get in school, that typically makes us think about things like chaos and no government and people running amok in the streets, which I guess that could be a result of miscellaneous. We could be running amok in the streets for a lot of reasons, not because of anarchy. Anarchy in real life is just a word. It is a word like monarchy and patriarchy. It's just anarchy means there is not any leader, instead of a monarchy where there's, you know, this monarch, there's one. And then in a patriarchy, the dad is in charge, the men are in charge. I think that the best example we have here on Earth today of what happens when you let a hierarchical structured patriarchy run amok, you use the Vatican and the Catholic Church. That's another one of my biases. I think they suck too. For many reasons, I'm sure, you know, fill in your own. There's a million reasons why they suck. But anyway, they are the establishment. The establishment wants everybody to think that if there was not a government with them in charge, things would be bad. There would be chaos. There would be bread, you know, whatever. It would be bad. And then we're so afraid that we buy their bullshit and don't question their authority. And what's happening in Occupy Wall Street, Wall Street today, and across the country, is people are questioning the authority of the establishment to do shit like bust people in the stomach and rupture their spleen and leave them to rot in jail all night, even though they're barking and screaming for help, like they just did in Oakland again to another veteran. It makes me wonder what will happen on Veterans Day this year, because people are getting pissed, and my friend Woody, who is Walden Pond, WALLED-IN, Pond, Woody Conopelli. Anyway, I forget what Woody says, but he always says something. anyhow, I've been thinking about anarchy because I've been reading a few articles by a fellow named David Graeber. He writes in a lot of places. He was a professor at Yale before. I'm not sure if he was asked to leave or if he didn't get tenure and quit or what, but it was not pleasant for anybody. Anyway, he's in London or England somewhere now working, but he's supposed to say, he was participated in the beginnings of Occupy Wall Street at the original Adbusters meeting back in August. And he's describing consensus decision-making in the current edition, at least I think it's current, of the Occupied Wall Street Journal from October 22nd. This is David Graeber, G-R-A-E-B-E-R, says about this meeting in August. The anarchists in the circle made what seemed, at the time, an insanely ambitious proposal. Why not let them operate exactly like this committee, by consensus? It was, in the least, a wild gamble because, as far as any of us knew, no one had ever managed to pull off something like this before. Consensus process had been successfully used in spokes councils, groups of activists organized into separate affinity groups, each represented by a single spoke, but never in mass assemblies like this one anticipated in New York City. Even the general assemblies in Greece and Spain had not attempted it, but consensus was the approach that most accorded with our principles, so we took the leap. 3 months later, hundreds of assemblies, big and small, now operate by consensus across America. Decisions are made democratically without voting, by general assent. According to conventional wisdom, this should not be possible, but it is happening in much the same way that other inexplicable phenomenon like love, revolution, or life itself from a perspective of, say, particle physics happen. The direct democratic process adopted by Occupy Wall Street has deep roots in American radical history. It was widely employed in the civil rights movement and by the Students for a Democratic Society. But its current form has developed from within movements like feminism and even spiritual traditions, both Quaker and Native American, as much as from within anarchism itself. The reason direct consensus-based democracy has been so firmly embraced by and identified with anarchism is because it embodies what is perhaps anarchism's most fundamental principle, that in the same way human beings treated like children will tend to act like children, the way to encourage human beings to act like mature and responsible adults is to treat them as if they already are. So that's David Graeber in the Occupied Wall Street Journal. When I listened to the last paragraph from a perspective of early childhood and him saying about treating people like children, I think that, number one, it gives kids a bad name, but it emphasizes the way the patriarchy, which is the establishment, which is the government, business leaders, and the church. So I'd identify the establishment as such, and they're all ass deep in money, right? Eyeball deep. It's all about the money right now. And anyway, so the establishment is a patriarchy, and as you know, some authoritarian dad, or maybe it's authoritative. I always get those confused. In the patriarchy, they are infantilizing all of us, and that's what, you know, treating like children means, like, you don't count, you don't have a voice, all those things that stupid dads, like that judge who was beating his daughter in Texas, of all places, because I don't know why this shit is always happening in Texas, but it is. And I say that as a fifth-generation Texan. It's embarrassing. That it's always from Texas, but, you know, there are other places where it happens. The point is that when some dickwad who thinks he knows everything is beating on a kid. You know, he's an asshole. And that's who the establishment is and is treating us like. And, like, it's like, you know, the people passing out the gruel in the movie Oliver when he goes up, oh, please, sir, may I have some more? And they all flip the shit out. Well, that was a bad word. They just flip out and tell him no, as if it's the most, you know, audacious thing to expect a second bowl of gruel when you've been laboring. And so, you know, but that is what happens when the workers are revolting against the owners. And as many things in life, that is a cycle. And Bill Moyers was speaking at, I think it was Public Citizen's 40th anniversary the other day, and pointed out that in the late 1800s, there was an agrarian populist movement against the robber barons. Also, a lot of labor going on because of the railroad barons, specifically Jay Gould, who said that he could hire one half of the working class to kill off the other. And I think the Koch brothers are working on it now. And that's, like, I, like, can't hardly talk anymore, so I am going to put on this clip of Chris Hedges, and I think he's on CBS, and it's just the mainstream media and how they're presenting Occupy Wall Street, and why if your dad is trying to not get you to do what you really want to do, and it's like they're going to ground us and beat us. This is bullshit. So I guess I'm kind of thinking like I did when I was really a kid and questioned authority, because they're relying on our obedience to their bullshit to maintain control over us now with a government that has been totally bought over by corporations. And although that's not necessarily what Mussolini was talking about when the term fascism was used back in the day, it's still fascism in America. So here comes Chris Hedges.
I think it expresses the frustrations that the American people feel that we had the biggest financial crisis since the Great Depression, huge collateral damage all throughout the country, all across Main Street. And yet, you're still seeing some of the same folks who acted irresponsibly trying to fight efforts to crack down on abusive practices that got us into this problem in the first place.
That was President Obama earlier today commenting on the growing frustration being expressed by the Occupy Wall Street movement protesters. That movement is spreading to cities across the United States and across the border to Canada starting next week. Chris Hedges is a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter and author and a participant at the Occupy Wall Street rally in New York last week and in Washington today. He joins us from our Washington Bureau. So, Mr. Hedges, you were a participant in the protest. How would you describe your role in this movement?
I'm not an organizer. I'm speaking tonight at the rally in Washington, and I've given interviews and participated in events in New York.
So what exactly is everybody complaining about? And is, to also give me a sense of how much momentum this movement has, because it looks pretty nothing burger so far. Just a few guys, guitars, nobody knows what they want. They can't even name the names of the firms that they're protesting against. Very weak, low budget.
I wouldn't agree with that assessment at all. They pulled thousands of people into the street last night. Here in Washington, when everybody marched past Bank of America, they knew they were shouting, shame, shame, shame. They know the names of these firms, and they know what these firms have done, not only to the American economy, but to the global economy and the criminal class who runs them.
Well, Kevin made this point of, you know, nobody knows what they want. What do you say to that? I mean, we know that this is a very diverse group. There are many different agendas at play. What is the sense you have of what this movement would like to see happen?
They know precisely what they want. They want to reverse the corporate coup that's taken place in the United States and render the citizenry impotent. And they won't stop until that happens. And frankly, if we don't break the back of corporations, we're all finished anyway, since they're rapidly trashing the ecosystem on which the human species depends for survival. This is literally a fight for life. It's that grave, it's that serious. Corporations, unfettered capitalism, as Karl Marx understood, is a revolutionary force. It commodifies everything, human beings, the natural world, which it exploits for profit until exhaustion or collapse. And the bottom line is we don't have much time left. We are on the cusp of perhaps another major banking crisis in Europe, defaults in Greece, followed by Spain, Portugal. There's been no restrictions, no regulations of Wall Street. They've looted the U.S. Treasury. They've played all the games that they were playing before. And we're about to pay for it all over again.
Listen, don't take this the wrong way, but you sound like a left-wing nut bar. If you want to shut down every corporation and every bank, where are you going to get a job? Where are you going to work? Where's the economy going to go?
Corporations don't produce anything. And
Really?
No. Financial corporations on Wall
Street. Are you
driving
a car to the protest?
No. They are speculators. I'm talking about the financial institutions like Goldman Sachs. They don't manufacture. They don't make anything. They gamble. They use money, and they believe falsely that money is real. As we dismantle our manufacturing base and send jobs over the border to Mexico and finally into the embrace of China.
Well, I see that you and Kevin could get into an absolutely huge argument here.
I don't usually go on shows where people descend to character assassination. If you want to discuss issues, that's fine, but I mean, this sounds like Fox News, and I don't go on Fox News. I mean, either you discuss the issues, and look, you have had very eloquent writers, people like John Ralston Saul in Canada, who have laid this out with, you know, incredible lucidity. And to somehow attack this critique by calling someone a nutcase engages in the kind of trash talk that's polluted the corporate airways.
Excuse me, let's debate the issues then.
You were the one who started it.
I didn't call you a nutcase. I called you a nut
You said
bar,
you sounded
right?
like a left-wing nutcase.
Yes, bar.
Okay, that's
bar.
An insult. And,
hey,
and
are you left-wing and leaning at least? Would you say?
No, I would say that
you're a centrist.
Can I finish?
Please.
I would say that those who are protesting the rise of the corporate state are in fact on the political spectrum the true conservatives, because they're calling for the restoration of the rule of law. The radicals have seized power, and they have trashed all regulations and legal impediments to a reconfiguration of American society into a form of neo-feudalism. And that's what we're really asking for, is the restoration of the rule of law.
Okay, but you don't see any value in the banking system providing a financial infrastructure.
That's not what I said.
I'm asking you.
A banking system that functions as a banking system should. And in Canada, you do not have a banking crisis because you did not tear down the walls between commercial and investment banks and turn all of your banks into hedge funds. If instead of handing massive sums of money to Citibank, Wells Fargo, which are basically zombie banks, they still hold tremendous toxic assets, we had created 10 regional banks with $10 billion each and leveraged them 10 to 1, people could have been saved. 6 million people have been pushed out of their homes because of foreclosures and mortgages. We could have reinvested in community. Small businesses, which cannot get credit, would have gotten credit. Instead, they're just sitting on the capital and not lending it.
So we're certainly giving you an opportunity to speak your mind. Just so we can come full circle, what do you suggest should be done with Goldman Sachs specifically?
They should be prosecuted. When you shove subprime mortgages on families that you know can't repay it, and then you dice up those mortgages as assets, and sell them and bet against them through AIG, that's fraudulent activity.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We'd like to hear your
thoughts. It'll be the last time.
So that was Chris Hedges a couple of weeks ago on the news.
November 3rd, earlier this week, Chris Hedges and Cornel West presided over a mock trial of Goldman Sachs. They're in Zuccotti Park. Hundreds of citizens from the park marched through Lower Manhattan to Goldman Sachs building to deliver a guilty verdict. 17 of them sat down in front of the entrance to the building. They were arrested by the NYPD. Chris Hedges was among them, and so was Reverend Billy, who is I like Reverend Billy. He's one of my favorite activists, and I see from his photo in the Reverend Billy bulletin that he had on his fabulous white cowboy boots, which I think he got from a fetish wear shop. They're outstanding and very unique and specific to Reverend Billy. And so anyway, he got hauled off to jail. Cornel West did too. It seems like that's all he's been doing lately. He was with Dennis Traynor, Jr., down in Washington, D.C., on the Supreme Court steps where they were arrested together along with some other folks on the day that the Martin Luther King statue was dedicated, drawing attention to the corrupt court, which we all know about Clarence Thomas and Anthony Scalia, anyway, you know the man. He's in the Koch brothers' pocket, and just trace the line back to the John Birch Society, and you understand the entire plan to get the things back to where the antebellum rules and the social order, where people were slaves, kind of like you're experiencing in Alabama today, now that a lot of the illegals left the state because of their state laws, and now nobody, the farm owners don't like it that the Americans won't take these jobs that the illegals had, and so now they're putting the chain gangs out in the fields to pick the crops for nothing to the owners, and I imagine that'll look a lot like a line of slaves, which, you know, they enjoyed. And it's the same people who would not sign off on the Declaration of Independence until slavery was institutionalized in this country and African Americans were declared as three-fifths human. These are the people that we are dealing with today in the Congress. As you look at the Republican Party, and I guess you could lump the Blue Dog Democrats in there right there, which simply proves this Occupy is not about, it's not a partisan issue. We have the occupation, we of the resistance, recognize that both parties are full of lobbyists, whores. Just imagine what you say when you think nobody is listening. That is enough for one day, I think, of this on the radio. I made it a half an hour, which was my goal for Gwen today, and I would like to invite everybody back to Gwendolyn's regular show with her friend Jack Jodell on Sundays. I think it starts at 6 here at Blog Talk Radio. More solidarity with the occupations here, there, and everywhere. And that is Tricia from Roundtree 7. That's Roundtree and the number 7.com. With a shout out to all my friends at worldwidehippies.com. I hope everything is well. And I'm looking forward to Occupy Central Park on 11-11-11. I don't know what's going on. I just know everybody's coming, and it's cool.
Bye.